Good morning and welcome back. The break is over. So how was the break?
It's good to have teachings again.
So it's not like, the teaching started. It's not like that, is it? Okay, that's good. And let's talk about our assignments. I remember giving you some assignments. Don't think that I've forgotten. Okay, how was it? Were you able to do it? Did you try? Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
Easy.
Easy peasy.
Easy peasy. About the third day, I realized there was only a couple of things that were
okay, checked good.
Off all the way down.
Ah, okay, good, good. So at least
no,
you...
real focus on comfort.
So you notice the pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's very good. That's the one of the goal, one of the purposes. So that when you see the pattern, then at least you know that where you are prone to engaging in negative karma, especially in terms of the 10 non-virtue. And then, yeah, of course, we should not leave it there. Oh, okay, there's a pattern. Let's go about our life. That's not the...
It's deceptive, too, because, I mean, clearly, if the column was checked off for killing all the way down, it would be kind of obvious. But you get to some of them, and it's like, oh, wait, this is this one. I didn't realize that all these years I was doing this.
Okay, that's very good. That's very good. That's very good. Okay. Yeah, that's very good. So the purpose is, the next year when we do this, we shouldn't be seeing anything. There's no pattern at all. Everything clean. That's the goal.
I took two journeys on the road, and I you can't help it, but you kill bugs. You know, they hit the car. And it's like, yeah, well, that means that maybe I should ride a bike, or maybe I should not travel very far or something.
Mm.
So, you wonder sometimes. But the key is that the completion of the karma, all the aspects aren't in place. They don't accumulate as much.
Yeah, of course, when we talk about complete karma, all these four components need to be present. So one of them is the intention. So when you drive on the road, you have no intention. And also you don't really, what you call, the recognize whatever the object. So it's lighter. Mm-hmm. Not too bad. But sometimes when you see a mosquito there, that's real killing. That's with intention we're doing that.
One of the trips to China we took, we were on a small guided tour, and the driver kept slowing down, speed up. They'd slow down and you'd speed up, and everybody's looking around what's going on. And we were following a truck that had beehives on it, and they were hitting the windshield, and it was awful. And we were all over the place, and he was clearly very upset. Didn't know what to do because if he was by himself, he would just pull off the side of the road. But he kept trying to fall farther and farther back, but so he wouldn't do that. But he was very, very visibly upset that he was doing it.
There was when I walked from my car to the door of my building where I work on the sidewalk, not on the. You know, parking lot, but on the sidewalk there's a lot of ants, and it's I've noticed that, you know, I try to do my best, and it's like I've been having, you know, thoughts about, you know, about the ants like I would as a sentient being, so that was good. But I've had to get rid of weeds. Tall weeds and grasses at my house, and I'm under a deadline because the city is. And when I pull things, and there are nests of ants, and they're on me. It's like, it instinctively. I just kind of So that was, you know, again, that's something, you know, to work on. But the rest, my patterns was that, you know, there's attachment anger, but the anger I've been working on for a long, long time, and it's gotten a lot better. But the attachment is like I'm really, really, really noticing it in all kinds of areas, you know. That so now I'm saying, oh, okay, that's two, you know. So I kind of, you know, like he said, it's kind of. So that was the attachment is my most predominant one that I've noticed. You know, so now I'm, you know, once you know it, you kind of, you know, you say, okay, you know, so you cannot unknow it. You still do it, you know, because it's the force that then you know, and eventually you notice how it doesn't give you any pleasure anymore because you have a conflict. And so that's how you begin to say, well, let that one go. You know, it's like it doesn't give you any, you know, just go, because it's the karma and all that. So, but yeah, it's it was useful. Thank you.
Anyone? Yes.
In a way, a little backwards. Sometimes when I would get upset, I would notice that it was all because of attachment. You know, instead of identifying attachment right away, you know, it was like I can almost always look at it and all the issues come from attachment.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's very encouraging to hear. Because I give you an assignment and you could have just stored it somewhere else, and then before class, where did I put that piece of paper? And you could have chosen not to do anything about it, but obviously you took it seriously. So that's very encouraging. I get inspired. And I thought, okay, good. We are going somewhere, getting somewhere. So that's very good. Thank you very much. And we of course, the ideal is to do that on a daily basis. And I have, I think, emphasized that several times. For us, we are monks. We took vows until, I think, until at least in this life, until we die, we will not engage in this and this and this and that. So when we don't engage in that, we get the merit of abstaining from these misdeeds. So whereas lay people, you don't take that vow. So when you take that vow, and even if you don't engage in these misdeeds, you don't get the merit from refraining from these negative actions. So it is very good to do or to kind of make the commitment on a daily basis. Every morning, make this a pledge or the commitment or determination that today I will not engage in 10 non-virtuous actions. Or if you are not very sure of certain negative actions that you may or you may not be able to, then you can just specify, I will refrain myself from committing this and this and this and this and that. And then by the end of the day, if you have consciously or you have without any conscious effort, if you have stayed away from these negativities, you at least have achieved that merit. So that is the way to do. But many people don't realize that there is this key element, key factor, that you have to consciously make this mindset to abstain from non-virtue. So that's important. So try to do that on daily basis, every morning. And then, of course, the best is by nighttime before going to bed, if you are able to kind of check on your day. This morning, I have made these commitments. Was I able to abide by that commitment? Was I good in, you know, making or fulfilling that commitment. So if you realize that you have committed something, then you kind of have a regret, and then make a stronger determination that, okay, tomorrow I will make sure that I will not repeat this. But if you find that you have really followed through, you have not committed any negative actions, then rejoice. That will multiply your merit. Just rejoicing, oh, it's so great that I was able to do that. But rejoice, we will later talk about. Rejoice is to help encourage ourselves, inspire ourselves to do more, but it should not go towards inflating our ego. I'm so great, you know, I haven't, you know, I'm free of all this. If it goes towards inflating your ego, then of course, it is kind of a countervailing. Yeah. So if you find that you have really followed through, rejoice in your merit, rejoice in your effort, and then make stronger prayer that may I be able to do more or better tomorrow or the future, in the future. So that's how we progress, keep our practice. We progress in our spiritual journey or to keep our practice getting better and better. So anyway, yeah, thank you very much for trying. And today is the day of the turning of the wheel of Dharma. Everybody knows the significance. When Buddha, the Sagadawa day, when Buddha achieved enlightenment, Buddha did not teach straight away. Buddha remained silent for 49 days, the common agreement. Of course, there is some debate on when Buddha really taught, when Buddha really turned the wheel of Dharma. So, but the common agreement is that today was the day Buddha started to teach, when Buddha turned the first sermon or the first wheel of Dharma. So what happened was, when Buddha achieved enlightenment, Buddha realized that what he has achieved is something completely different from the ways of people. It is more like an abnormal behavior. So I think Buddha's advice and way of doing will be kind of deviant from the norm. So that's why Buddha felt that no point. I think it is too profound. People won't understand. So I better remain silent. That is the one reason. Another reason is, even in Vinaya Sutra, there is this saying that teachers need to be requested to teach. Teacher will say, okay, come, I'm going to teach you. You cannot do that. People must show interest. People must request to teach. Only then Lama can teach. So, of course, nobody knew at that time that Buddha was Buddha. But of course, the devas, Indra and Brahma and all this, they all knew that Buddha have achieved enlightenment. So they came and made repeated request to teach, for the sake of, especially for the people dwelling in the earth realm and also to deva realm and all. Only after that, then Buddha decided to teach. And then Buddha walked to Sarnath, Varanasi, where the first teaching, and then taught the first Four Noble Truths, the teachings on the Four Noble Truths. So in Tibetan tradition, as well as I think in all Buddhist tradition, we try to do virtue on these special days. So it is normally said that one will achieve the merit multiplies, and one will achieve, even though one accumulate one merit, but one will achieve the merit of doing 1,000 times or even say 1,000,000 times. Because of that, many people really grab these significant days and then maximize their practice. And I read in Geshe Soba's book when he explains, where he explains why on these special days merits multiply. One reason is that during Buddha's time, there are many protectors and devas. They made all kinds of pledges. And one of the four kings, they made the pledge that we will protect those who practice. And especially on these special days. So what happened is, every now and then, these protectors or these guardians, they will go and see whether people are doing any virtue or not. So especially it is said on these special days, they will go and kind of check whether people are in this, the humans are whether practicing or not. And it is said that when they go, normally other devas will also follow to see. And what happens is when they come to see, they see that people are really doing their best. They are engaging in all kinds of virtuous practices. So when they see that, they rejoice. And then they go to their own realm and share the news, that good news, that oh, on earth, human beings are really doing lots of merits. And then others also rejoice in that merit. And then the news kind of spreads. And in the end, all the devas, they rejoice in our merit. So they also achieve that merit. Because of that, it is said that it is so meritorious to especially focus on these special days. That is one reason.
Which book is this?
Geshe Soba's Lam Rim Che Mo commentary.
Which
the first, I think it's also in the first volume. Also, I think there's another in second volume. He explains twice. That's one reason. Second, we are all, not me now, so all of you are working people. We are so busy, especially those in the West. Time is so precious. Even if we want to spend time doing practices, there is no time. So when there is no time, and it is wise to grab those opportunities where, you know, if you just do one and it multiplies, what is better way than grabbing on these special days to do practices? And today happened to be our first class. I didn't plan, and I plan according to the calendar. And later I realized, hey, that coincides with this special day. So it's very good, auspicious. That's just a preliminary, and now we are going to discuss on the real topic. Remember where we stopped? Let me test you. Where did we stop last time?
My notes leave off at arranging the altar.
Yeah, we finished the second one.
Okay.
What is the first one? Do you recall? The first of the six.
Cleaning.
Remember, cleaning the room and arranging the representations of Buddha's body, speech, and mind. So I am thinking of doing this practice next Sunday. The first part, maybe, or we will see how it goes. You can bring your offerings if you have water bowl sets, that's very good. If you have, then bring. If not, we can arrange those plastic ones, and then we will try to follow this one. Of course, we are not going to vacuum the place, but we will use the table as our altar. Then we practice setting up the altar. You don't have to bring, but at least I just want you to know how to set up the altar. And then, yeah, we do the water balls and followed by other practices. That's the plan.
Do you bring a picture?
Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, if it is not too much of an inconvenience, then yeah, bring. We will kind of practice that. And then the second one is obtaining offerings without deceit and arranging them beautifully. So you can bring your offerings, whatever offerings you have. Water ball, of course, that is going to be the main one. And then, yeah, you can bring flowers, you can bring incense, even those tea lights. If not, we can use, I think Anthony has here. We can use Anthony's one. So we have covered the first two. And then, yeah, today we are going to talk about adopting the seven feature sitting posture. So let's... Okay. So the third preparatory practice is the sitting posture. In Tibetan Buddhism, especially Tibetan Buddhism, there's so much focus on this. And especially if you are, I think there are benefits from the tantric perspective. So when you are doing these deity meditations, there are special significance and special benefits. I don't know and I won't go into detail. So generally, when we do meditation, we need to adopt this seven-featured sitting position, or sometimes called eight posture. That's the sitting position. And then, of course, the third one is not just the sitting position, adopting this right sitting posture, and then taking refuge and generating bodhicitta mindset. That is the third one. So there is a stanza to summarize these eight sitting positions, which is called the sitting position of Buddha Vairochana. Mm. Of course, all Buddhas sit in that position. But why we call this Vairochana position is because Vairochana is the purified aspects of form body. So that's why we refer this position as the sitting positions of Buddha Vairochana. So it says that it is easier if you remember this. So in Tibetan it says Kangba Lawa Keva Sum Suju Chenam Dombe Shi Gomik Tawa Udani Namba Nangze Shui Gayins. In English translation, they have translated as the legs, the hands, and spine make three. So they are counting the eight. Brought to four by teeth, lips, and tongue. So count these three as one. So that makes four. And then the head, eyes, shoulders, plus the breath are four. So these are the eight practices of Vairochana. So the first, the leg. So legs, sometimes called lotus position, sometimes called Vajra posture. So it is actually, we all know that this is the one. Let me show you. The first one, where you place your feet on the opposite thigh. So that is not easy to do, but it is said that it is very beneficial. This really helps to maintain your spine straight, and especially if you are going to do meditation for long periods of time. This is the ideal position. But of course, if you are not used to, it is very hard. I cannot do that. 5 minutes, too painful. So I always use the half. That is this normal the sitting one. But of course, you can learn how to do. How many of you sit in this position?
Not for long.
Full.
Not for long.
Okay. So that's if you can, that's the best posture. I mean the leg position to have the full lotus or the full vajra posture. If not, then half. If you cannot do that, of course we know that it is to adopt the most comfortable posture. Whatever you find comfortable. If you have knee problem, all this, of course you cannot do that. So the important thing is that we want to be comfortable when we are doing meditation. So that's the how the leg should be. And then the spine should be upright. The examples they give, analogy they give is like the way you stack the coins. It should be really straight. And Sangdong Rinpoche says that the way to test whether your spine is straight or not is you use this hand and then you touch at the thigh here, and I think it's like this story out here. And if you are able to close the gap, if there's no gap and if you're able to touch that, that means your spine is straight.
I can't see. What are you doing?
This.
The way it's doing. You just touch this to your side thigh here. I think it's somewhere here at your hips. Right by your hips. And see whether you can really touch this here. There shouldn't be any gaps. If there is gap, then it means your spine is not straight. But of course, that becomes like more like this kind. We normally don't really sit, but that is supposed to be the way to measure that whether your spine is straight. So the most important thing is not like this, but straight. It is said that when you straighten your spine, and we remember in Tantra there's something called central channel and then two parallel channels. So they get straightened. When they are straight, the wind flows better. When wind flows better, of course, your mind is clearer. All these minds run on these channels, wind channels. So when there is what you call smooth flow of wind in your channel, then your mind works better, functions better. And then the head's slightly bent forward. When you do like this, it is said that it is too easy to distract. It is too prone for distraction. So you should not let your raise your head too high. Instead, kind of little bit like a bit bent, not too much, but slightly bent forward. And then the hands. Normally we say that in the meditation gesture. Your right hand on top of your left hand. And then of course nowadays they say that you can also place your hands on your knees. So whichever is comfortable. And then shoulders must be level, not like one side down, this side down, not slouching, but straight or level. And then mouth and teeth, it says leave it at natural position. Don't try to, you know, try to close or try to open, but let it be at the natural position. And normally it says the tip of the tongue should rest gently on the upper palate. That there is this benefit that if you do that, it will avoid what you call drooling, and also it will prevent thirst. If you have to do a long period of meditation, then yeah, it will help to reduce thirst. Then eyes should be almost closed. So there are different traditions. Some say that, oh, it is better to close your eyes. But the Tibetan tradition is that you should not close your eyes. You should open gently. And then when your eyes should be looking in front of you, not too far, but they said that you lower your eye gaze on the tip of your nose. Some say that you should be seeing the shoulders of your nose, some say the tip of the nose. So whichever is convenient, but you shouldn't be gazing too far, but just lower and then gently half open. If you open too much, then there is distraction. So that's the seven features or the seven postures that is recommended. And then sometimes they add on top of the seven, there is something called the eighth feature, which is the breathing. So these are some examples of a posture, full, half. This is Burmese style. Yeah, you can still sit like this, do this, then of course on a chair. So the last, number eight, is counting one's breath. The purpose, of course, nowadays in secular practice, the meditation on the breath becomes the main meditation. But in actual practice, this is a technique to change non-virtuous mental state into a neutral one. So if your mind is so agitated, let's say if you're so angry and if you sit down and try to meditate, no way you will be able to do the meditation. So we need to convert that agitated mind mental state to a neutral one. Only then we will be able to do a purposeful or meaningful meditation. Otherwise, your mind will be all over the place. So this is the way. This is similar to way the dye cloth. In order to dye a cloth effectively, the color need to be a neutral, the white. If you have already a colored cloth and if you try to change that into another color, it is very difficult. But if it is white, if it's a neutral, then you can dye it to any color. So likewise, before we start the meditation, we need to start the meditation with a positive attitude, positive mental state. But if your mind is not in a positive mental state, and instead it is in non-virtue like anger, something else, agitated mental state, then it is very difficult to set a virtuous mind mental state. So in order to counter that, we do this counting of the breath. Our ordinary mind, it can only focus on one object at a time. So if you are thinking of something else, you will forget. You will be distracted. So it is like normally the kids, when kids cry and, you know, when their throat tantrum, what we do normally, oh, we give a toffee or something. Oh, yeah, there's a toffee. And suddenly the kid forgets about why he was crying. He stops immediately and he grabs that one. So likewise, when we focus or direct our mind on this breathing, then we forget that whatever thing that is causing this agitation. So that's the main purpose of doing the counting of our breath. But nowadays, that's the main practice. So how do we do that? That's easy. So you just focus your mind on your breath and then count. As you breathe in, breathe out, count as one. If you are alone, you can call one, two. But if you are with other people, you just, what is the word? Count silently. Mentally count. So breathe in, breathe out, one. So you can do this 10 times, 20 times, 21 times, as long as it requires you to calm your mind. Only then you start doing meditation. And then there is another practice that this is more of a tantric practice, which I think it is very beneficial. Beneficial in terms of, I don't know about the spiritual, of course there is, definitely there is benefits. But in terms of health-wise, I think it is very beneficial. And when I was in Atlanta, I did that almost every day. And I didn't get flu the 2 years in Atlanta. And I attribute that to this. It may be, it may not be. But when I got here, I didn't do it. Now I was down with flu. So, of course, this may be, it may not be the case. But what we do, I think some of you may be familiar. So you first do this. Hold your this from here. Oh, you get in, sorry, it's put on your knees. Place this on your knees. And then you pull up. As you pull up, you have to breathe in. And then I think this way, this is your to your right. Bring here, put this underneath, and then bring this hand, put here. Then breathe in from here, because you have closed this. Breathe three times. I normally blow my nose before I do that. So there's one, and then again. Now this time, go this way, and then this side. Now breathe from both. Yeah, so three times. So it's called 9 rounds of breathing. So before you start your meditation, if you do that, I find that quite helpful. So that's one way to do. So you got it? Want to try? Okay. Let's go. Okay. One. No, you have to. I think you cannot see me. Yeah. You have to really push in a way that, you know, you are pressing, but you are pushing. Try to take as deep as possible. That's good. Okay. Next round. You see, you already feel better, don't you?
Question. Uh-huh. When you do the breathing in and out, do you do the breathing in and then you out of the other way?
Or yeah, out of the other way.
Okay.
So when you do this, and then you let out from this one.
And then how do you finish it?
And then when you finish this, you bring down. And then you start again. But the last one, when you breathe from both, you don't have to bring your hand. You just put your hand there, and then... Yeah.
So you do it two times with the arms, and then the third one...
Yeah,
down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there a difference between the ring finger
and the... Doesn't matter. I think mainly is to, I think it's block. So you can either use this way to go, or you can even use your thumb. I don't think it has any difference. Whichever is more comfortable. So that's the counting one's breath, mainly to mainly to neutralize our mind so that it can generate a positive mindset. So once you have done that, so now you have finished sitting down with the right posture, and then you have already neutralized your mind, and now begins with a refuge practice. So we have already covered this topic, and I think you have all the information you need. But basically, why do we need to take refuge? Why do we need to take refuge? It's because...
You want us to answer?
Because... Okay. I'll let you answer first.
Oh, okay.
Why do we need to take refuge?
Because we need help. Three jewels are our source of protection and refuge. They are the three jewels who protect us and help us in our practice.
Yeah.
It's also the foundation. We're going to the foundation. We're eliminating all these other things and we concentrate to this one. This is what we do, not the rest.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, it is basically same. Just to elaborate on that, so from the Buddhist perspective, yeah, so we are all Buddhists, so let's say. So we have taken so many lives, numberless lives, countless lives. There is not a single life, I think, that we have not taken. One time we have experienced or we have enjoyed the life of kings and queens or princes. One time we have experienced the suffering of hell beings. We were born in hell realms. We have become leaders of great nations. We are born in Deva realms. We have even achieved what you call Samadhi and all that. So there was a lot of fluctuation in our rebirths. We have taken one time we are so low, but another time we are up there. But what, no matter how many times we circle within that samsara. We were not able to go beyond that. Even though we wanted to get out of this existence, cyclic existence, and we thought that we were putting effort towards that, because we are all driven by this wanting to be happy and not wanting to be unhappy and experience miseries. But all our effort ended up just in that circle. We were never able to go beyond that. That's why we are still here. And if we don't do anything, we will circle more. And at the moment, we are very lucky in many ways. We are very fortunate in many ways. Unlike the previous lives when we were born in lower realms, we were very fortunate this time. Not only we have achieved human rebirth, but we have all the mental faculties and abilities, what we call the inside and our inner and external facilities. We have achieved all that facilities to practice. But this life, not only that we have met Dhamma, it is very rare. And then Dhamma, there are different Dhamma, but we have met Mahayana. And we have met teachers, great teachers. So there is all the, facility and we have all the external facilities. If we are to put effort, it is possible to achieve even enlightenment, if not nirvana, if not even the human rebirth in next life. And this life won't last forever. There has been drastic changes in our life. But we don't realize, because all these changes occurred in a very sneaky way. One time we were just infant, where our communication to the outside world is only through crying. But now we can articulate abstract concepts. We can give lectures, we can scold our children in a lengthy way. And for Asian people, Asian parents, let's put it, they can now slap their children. Is that 7 ways to Sunday? But you see that radical changes, but we never realize. One time we are just toddlers, now we are grown. We are parents, we are some of us even grandparents. But we didn't really notice these changes. So it's happening. And if we continue, while we are talking, this change is happening. Aging is happening. Then, when the time comes, we don't know. So that's why we need to do something. We need to do something different. Remember the Einstein's word? Insanity, defined as doing the same thing repeatedly and expecting a different result. That's what we have been doing. So this time we must wake up and then do something different. So that's why we need to take refuge. Buddha is the only one who has gone beyond that, who has found the way, who has taken the journey to that unknown destination. So even in our conventional sense, if we need to get to a place unknown to us, we need to seek someone's help who has been there. And of course, we have discussed about Buddha, not only that he has been to the place, but he has all the skillful means to help us lead there. And not only that, he has no biases. He has compassion to all. Whether you are relative or not relative, whether you are enemy or stranger, Buddha has no discrimination. Buddha will help. And then, whether you do favor or not, whether you make offerings to Buddha or not, it doesn't matter, Buddha will still help. So that's why we need to take refuge. So this is where, once you have finished sitting this, not just saying the words, first you have to think through, especially contemplate on the sufferings in general, the suffering of samsara in general, and then specific sufferings of the three lower realms. And then once you have some kind of sensation, some kind of feeling of these sufferings, then you kind of direct your focus on other sentient beings. Like me, they are also in the same boat. They are also going through all these sufferings. And then for that, I will take refuge. I will go for refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And normally we have this in Tibetan practice, we see this, I take refuge in the Guru. But in other tradition you won't see that. But it is because that Buddha has once come and taught and gone. We didn't have the fortune to meet Buddha in that form, Nirmanakaya form. But Buddha comes in many forms, because Buddha's main purpose is to help sentient beings. So from the strictly speaking, from the Lamrim practice, Buddhas are kind of a manifestation of Buddhas. So they, because they cannot appear in that their Nirmanakaya form, they have to come or appear in another form that we can have access. So that's why the teachers come. So that's why our gurus are like a, if you cannot imagine that as a Buddha himself, but as a messenger. Guru is the one who passes the message, Buddha's message. So that's why we include that. That is the main one. Because whatever realization we are going to achieve, it is through Guru. Without that, no achievements. So that's why in Tibetan practice there is always I take refuge in the Guru. Then once you have the refuge, you have this strong faith in Buddha. So all this saying is one thing, but you need to have some feeling inside. You have to generate this faith that, oh, these are the real refuge, these are the real saviors, that if I take refuge in them, they can save me. They can really lead me to Buddhahood. So you need to have that kind of strong faith. With that faith, then we generate a bodhicitta. So first, of course, you have to contemplate your own suffering, the way you are suffering. And then you direct that towards other sentient beings. Others are like me, and I have the responsibility. And then you say, may all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from misery and the causes of misery. May all sentient beings never be separated from happiness devoid of misery. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from biases of attachments and aversion. And then you can go further. This is all generating that motivation. So now you do this practice, what is known as the Four Immeasurables. So it begins with equanimity. If you really think and analyze why we suffer, it is all because of this discriminating thoughts of anger and attachment, this bias view. We have this bias view of attachment towards those whom we classify as our friends. And then we have this aversion towards those whom we view as people with difficulty. And then, of course, we kind of show indifference to those who has nothing to do with us. So these two, mainly these two, the attachment and the aversion, are the causes of all the sufferings. So we say that how wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were to abide in equanimity. So here the equanimity is free from this discriminating thoughts. When people don't have this biased view, this prejudice of treating somebody special over another, that would be wonderful, isn't it? Then we will never have these hatred crimes. Remember, just yesterday there was this shooting incident. They say that it is a hate crime. So if everybody were able to abide in a community, we wouldn't have any violence. How wonderful that is. So you say how wonderful, you really wish that. And then also make the prayer, may they abide in a community. And then you take responsibility. I myself will cause them to abide in a community. And then you also request your Guru Buddha to bless you to achieve that. And then you move on to the love. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings had happiness and its causes. If everybody is happy, how wonderful that would be. May they have happiness and its causes. You make that wish. And then I myself will cause them to have happiness and its causes. And then you request for Buddha, Guru Buddha, to bless you to be able to do so. And then once you have you spend some time on that, and then you move on to the next one, the compassion. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were free from suffering and its causes. So you have to have some feeling in here, not just reciting the words. So you spend some time and then really wish for that. So that would be more meaningful. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were free from suffering and its causes. May they be free from suffering and its causes. I myself will cause them to be free from suffering and its causes. Please, Guru Buddha, bless me to be able to do so. So this I myself will cause them, I will do it. So because of that, you are doing all these practices. So this will inspire you to do more practices, because now you are taking the responsibility. So the difference between the Theravada practitioner, let's say Hinayana practitioners, compassion and Mahayana compassion, the difference is that even though both compassion wishes others to be happy, but there is no, what you call, the taking of responsibility. I will make them happy. I will free them happy. That there is this difference. So here it is Mahayana practice. So you're saying that I will make it happen. And then how wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were never separated from the happiness of higher rebirth and liberation. May they never be separated from this. I myself will cause them never to be separated from this. Please, Guru Buddha, bless me to be able to do so. So this is the third preliminary practices or the preparatory practices. So first you sit down with that correct posture, and then you generate, first go for refuge, and then generate bodhicitta, and then generate all this, what do you call this? These wishes, the four wishes, or the four immeasurables. Okay, we will stop here. Yeah. So I have a question. So today is a special day. So we have I have arranged this prayer recitation, a short prayer, praising Buddha. Buddha by way of 12 deeds.
Okay.
So shall we do the prayers and call it a day, or you want to go a bit more?
Do the prayer.
Yeah.
Focus on that.
And let's do. Okay, in that case, first, Ken, you can do the mandala and mandala first.
Okay.
We conclude this.
And then where do you want do you want to do the entire King of Prayers?
No, I have prayer here.
Oh, you have it here.
Okay. Yeah.
So on page 4.
Joje medo dama rera alenje nyende gamba de sanje shendo mende buaye droge nanda jena jubara sho guru rana mendala ganaya daya mes. Okay, so we have this praise by way of 12 deeds. And this praise is attributed to Nagarjuna. Can you see? Okay, so we will read together. I don't have a copy. Can you see all? Okay. We will recite slowly. Okay. Can umze go. Skillful compassion, born in the Shakya clan, unconquered one, subduer of Mara's horde, your body shining like a pile of gold, King of the Shakyas, homage to you. You who first produced the thought of Bodhi, then completed both accumulations, merits and wisdom, with vast deeds becoming beings protectors in this age, I will praise. Knowing, O tamer of gods, it was time to tame us. You came descending from heaven as an elephant, saw your caste and entered in the womb of Queen Maya, homage to this deed. When 10 months completed, you were born Shaitya Prince in fortunate Lumbini Grove, supreme marks honored by Brahma and Shaitya compound, your body lineage, homage to this deed. As a powerful youth lion among men, you showed your skill in Magadha, put an end to man of pride and had none to match you, homage to this deed. By skillful means to conform to the laws of the world and for avoidance of blameworthiness, you ruled at court possessed of female retinue, homage to this deed. Seeing samsaric doings had no essence, you left your home and going in the air, Give yourself the going forth before the quiet pure sanctuary, homage to this deed. Thinking to reach enlightenment through effort, you practice for 6 years austerities on Niranjana's bank, and perfecting energy, one highest dhyana, homage to this deed. To make worthwhile your efforts without beginning, sitting beneath the Bodhi tree in Magadha, in unshakable posture, you fully awaken to perfect Bodhi, homage to this deed. Swiftly observing beings with compassion in holy places like Varanasi, you turn the wheel of Dhamma, setting disciples on the three vehicles, homage to this deed. To put an end to evil opposition at Gaya in Bodh Gaya, you subdue the Maharas, Devadatta, six Tritika teachers and others, sage victorious in battle, homage to you. With qualities unmatched in the three worlds, at Saraswati you showed a mighty miracle, worshipped by all beings divine and human, spreading the doctrine, homage to this deed. Exhaust the lazy to be quicker at the pure sight Kushika.
You destroyed your deathless
Vajra-like body, entering Nirvana, homage to this deed. So future sentient beings could gather merits, and because really there was no destruction, you manifested many relics there, remains in 8 portions, homage to this deed. So do we want to recite dedication prayers? Yes.
Janchu Samcho Rinpoche Mange Bana Gebyoche Gyeva Nyamba Mebaya Kone Kondo Pewa Sho Jetsun Lame Kudze Rabden Jin Namga Jele Shoshu Yeva Dan Lozan Tembe Jome Sasumungi Jove Mze Tantu Negyoche Kurve Shinkangju Pendang Dewa Malu Jungwe Ne Chere Siwan Tingzin Yasu Yi Shabe Siti Partu Tengyuru Ji Champel Palu Chita Kenpa Tang Kuntu Sangbu Tenyang Dishin Te Teta Kunji Jesu Talo Ji Gyewa Teta Tamshi Ratu Gyawa Tamche Ki Mowa Kala Chotu Ngapa De Taki Kiwi Tsawa Dikun Jan Sambo Chuchi Raptu Mowa Jee.